Hey, listener! Welcome to episode 58 of I'm Trying to Think. I'm Chuck Warner. With me, as always, is Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hello.
And this is actually, this is Kitty. So,
is it? Oh, like, this is the...
Yeah, like, you probably thought it was Mickey, but the fact is that Kitty, by Racy, is the first song. And Mickey, Tony Bezel, rejiggered, if you will, Kitty into her hit, Mickey. This, obviously, the Tony Bezos song's an 80s song. This is a 70s song. I mean, they aren't that far apart, like only like 5 years or so, but still, this obviously like a much more raw sound. Very
not it's sort of like
processed. Just kind of the organ is just
like kind of garagey, yeah, garagey. Too much organ.
Hey, too much organ, Dave.
Too much organ is never enough.
No such thing.
Unless you're the Doors, in which case too much organ is too much.
Oh, shut up, man.
Hey, we can come back. We can circle back, though.
You're such a hater.
We can circle back to a mutual love for the zombies, though, if we're talking organ heavy.
Yeah, we do love the zombies.
Also the animals.
How about the iron of the butterfly?
That's the right amount of organ for them to be using.
You think that's the right amount of organ?
Yeah. It's not the right amount of organ for everything, but iron butterfly definitely uses the right amount of organ for iron butterfly.
Episode 58 of I'm Trying to Think is brought to you by the Foundation Institute. You can find them online at foundation-institute.org. You can find us online at imtryingtothink.com or facebook.com/imtryingtothink or twitter.com/imtryingtothink. Wikipedia.org/imtryingtothink. Not going to work.
Oh,
those bastards. They've
got problems. They've got stringent requirements.
They have stringent requirements.
We need to be mentioned in some sort of paper magazine.
Yeah.
On paper.
If somebody has a paper magazine to mention us in, or, you know, somebody should do online reviews of the show, then we can link to them, and then it's legit.
I don't know. They have issues. It's kind of weird, because Wikipedia is a website. But they got issues with websites. Like, if we want to fast track into Wikipedia, we got to get our name out there on dead trees.
Yeah, it seems kind of...
Or on television.
Oh, television, that's the authority figure that they respect.
Yes, possibly on a phonograph record.
Ooh.
Radio broadcast.
I would love to do...
I'm Trying to Think Vinyl.
I would love to do I'm Trying to Think Vinyl. You know, we could, I don't know, do it on vinyl and sell it at shows.
Sound would be really warm.
We have this problem that we don't do shows.
Yeah.
We could do shows.
But if we had vinyl to hawk, we'd have to get out there.
You think, I mean, we could do like a, if somebody had a poetry slam or something, we could do a bit.
Yeah.
Which is
just one thing people love at poetry slams.
Yeah.
It's people doing bits. Like real serious poetry slams. They love shtick.
We'll get up there, set down our two laptops, throw our microphones on, start podcasting, and just be like, this is our art. Don't question it. Seriously, you know, this is what we do. Exactly. All right, Dave, you had a topic.
Yeah, I mean...
Top that ick. Is that...
That's not
the verb form, right?
That's not that, no.
Topicate it.
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay, I'll topicate this. It's continuing from where we were last week.
Yeah.
You know, we'd been talking about the whole free will problem.
Right.
We put that to bed. So we're done with that. We got that covered.
I have solved that problem so many times now, I'm pretty much sick of solving it.
But one thing that came up in that conversation, which I thought we should explore further.
Ooh.
You know, you were talking about kind of when people think about free will and, you know, if, you know, sort of the structures in their mind that, you know, underlie it and kind of fall down, people tend to have crises about it, and those crises don't necessarily make sense. We talked about that. We talked from there, you know, we talked about existential crises a little bit.
Yeah.
And what to me is interesting about all that stuff is kind of the tension and the idea between the fact that I think people want, and, you know, possibly intellectually in a certain sense, need these kind of baseline systems, you know, undergirding the world for them, you know, kind of cosmologically, you know, ontologically, you know, take any good philosophy word and add logically at the end of it, you know, epistemologically, why not? You know,
briefly,
morologically.
Briefly.
Briefologically, yeah.
Briefologically, I want to say, it may sound a little bit like we recorded episode 58 alongside a highway, and that is because we recorded episode 58 alongside a highway.
Yep. We were on our way to one of our live shows to move some vinyl.
To move some vinyl out of the back of the van.
Van broke down.
Had to podcast.
We didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah. That's how we've
shot the road flares. We can do nothing but wait.
That would be a good, emergency car kit tool is the flare that fires up into the air, the warning flare. I want to alert everyone nearby that I have a flat tire. Where's the inner Coast Guard?
The land guard.
To drive their tank up and rescue me. Hey, well, that tank didn't get anywhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's why the land guard needs a tank. All right, anyways, highway aside.
All right.
So let me break it down to you.
Sure, if you want to spin back to what we were talking
about. This is how life goes, okay? The human being is born into, you know, what is essentially just another biological life, just like a dog or a lion. A life that, you know, requires survival skills, food, water, basic shelter against adverse weather.
Maslow stuff. Low-level Maslow stuff.
Exactly. And that is basically all that is actually required. The capacity of a human being to think, create technology, use tools, communicate, all these things that are, you know, deeply ingrained in our genetics and our physical characteristics, between, you know, hands with opposing thumbs that allow us to grip, upright posture, large brains that are built to grow into a communicating brain. I mean, there are just parts of your brain that want to talk, that want to, you know, learn a language. So it's obviously part of our code as well. Anyways, so we have all those natural things and we come into the world and all that is really required of us is to eat and sleep and poop. But when you give communication, you get society, because when you communicate with one another, ideas and themes are passed from person to person. And then what happens is the same biological processes that are used to respond to emergencies in the wild, you know, being chased by a predator, the same sort of thing that's used to distinguish a safe distance to fall from too far to fall or too high to climb from just about the right amount to climb or too far to jump or too deep to swim. Your brain uses these to evaluate everything else in life, too.
Ideas, specifically. Yeah. That seems like where you're going, right?
Yes, exactly. Ideas, concepts, conversations, material goods, everything.
Now, here's something that's actually kind of interesting, I guess, evolutionarily or, you know, culturally. Would you say to a certain extent that's kind of a mismatch of we've got this tool in our brain and it's, you know, we've got the hammer in our brain and these things may not necessarily be nails?
Yes.
I would say, for example, I mean, the obvious difference is, you know, a leopard can kill you.
Yep.
An idea that someone tells you
cannot
kill you in that way.
You feel the same way. That this is actually brought out very, very clearly in stress psychology. You react the same way to having to give a speech as you would to being chased by an animal. Your body undergoes the stress response, fight or flight response, same response for, you know, like I said, giving a speech as it would be for I'm about to be attacked. Your body dumps a bunch of, you know, digestive juices into your stomach and stuff to try and get any energy that's there out. You may evacuate your bowels to lessens weight, but also if there's stuff in your bowels, it's probably not worth digesting anymore. We need to get some energy from something else. And adrenaline is dumped into your system, which is basically a poison if it's not used. If you run, adrenaline is used up and it's great. If you have an adrenaline surge and you don't do anything with it, it's bad for you, basically. without getting into biological stuff that I don't really remember anymore anyways. And all this stuff is really, really bad when you're giving a speech because it's not helpful at all. So your body is actually doing the everything is a nail response as well. But your mind does it too. You just get into easy things to explain through the kind of evolutionary psychology framework are like prejudices, because something that is different can be dangerous. So, you know, we want liking sameness is good in a biological community. Certain aspects of attractiveness have to deal with genetic viability. Sure. But, you know, the evolutionary psychologists go way overboard, too. And they are also trying to make everything a nail in their own way. When they, you know, they're just
unverifiable, untestable nail.
Untestable nails, exactly. Like,
we got beef with evolutionary psychology.
Yeah, I just read a blog post by some evolutionary psychologist who said, well, kids don't want to go to bed at night because, alone, and because the dark and being alone are dangerous. Not necessarily. And we're obviously, we're very clearly creatures that were meant to be active during the day and not at night. So why would we then not go to sleep at night? Kids don't want to go to bed because life is exciting. Things are going on. They want to be a part of them. Why would anyone want to be stuck in a room being told to go to sleep if they're naturally not feeling like going to sleep? And some kids clock right the fuck out. So, you know, I mean, it's just that it's a bullshit hypothesis and absolutely untestable.
Yep. So short summary on that. Then I'm going to spin things back to where we were, because I think I got like halfway through the opening explanation that was going to make everything make sense. Then we started talking about the land guard.
Hey, so, the land guard is a serious topic. It's important. They need your support. Support our land guard troops.
God bless them.
God bless everyone. Our land guard troops.
But anyhow, so quick, just cutting the evolutionary psychology thing off the past. The ultimate problem is there's a lot of bad evolution. You know, there's some good evolutionary psychology, sure, but there's a lot of bad stuff out there. And the problem is, you know, the fundamental problem of bad science is, you know, correlation. correlation. It's not causation. Evolutionary psychology to me is, you know, observing a correlation and just making up a causation and grounding it in cavemen did it.
Everyone out there know this correlation is not causation. And now we're done. We've done a public service.
Yep.
Let's move on. Anyways.
So anyhow, spinning back to
but what this, I was talking this about all first. Feeds this all feeds
oh,
into
I understand
me,
how so. It does, and I'm bringing some of it back.
All right.
Is so what you were talking about to me when you were getting into, you know, drilling into, you know, kind of the fight or flight stimulus, you know, ideas are not leopards, you know, all the stuff we just spent the last 10 minutes talking about.
Sure.
Where that comes into this sort of, you know, crisis, you know, makes, you know, crisis of free will, you know, existential crisis, you know, learning an idea and, you know, throwing yourself out of a loop, even though that might not make sense, you know, that has an obvious connection to me, which would of course be that, you know, essentially, you know, you hear the idea, you know, oh, free will doesn't exist. And as opposed to, you know, rationally turning it over, you know, this is what this means, you know, this is how that would work. Does this affect my life? You know, that idea is a leopard.
I mean, yeah,
that explains exactly. Crises to me. But then to me, the sort of second half of what I wanted to talk about that I think is interesting is, you know, especially, and this comes to a certain extent in the free will thing, because free will, you know, what free will is kind of matters in a certain sense to morality. And it also comes for a lot of people, I think, with the God thing, because obviously a lot of people's kind of the idea they have of a moral system, you know, it's got a big guy sitting at the top, you know, dictating down. To me, what's interesting is, you know, if these big systems are disrupted for people, you know, they will have these crises a lot for kind of the reasons we've, you know, been talking about. But even if, and I think, you know, certainly a lot, if not most, you know, I'm not a statistician and I don't know everybody, so I'm not going to make a blanket statement on everybody.
You don't know everybody?
I don't know everybody. I haven't gotten out.
Oh, man, you got to get out more.
And, you know, so I'm not going to say everybody, because somewhere somebody does anything. So I'm never going to say everybody. statistically.
That's the greatest observation of our time.
Yep.
Somewhere.
I'm making bold claims, Chuck.
Everybody does something.
That's not what I said. That's ridiculous. Oh, I said somewhere somebody does anything. Please.
I see.
Please.
That's an important difference.
Very important. But I think most people, you know, in their day-to-day, you know, just kind of street level on the ground.
Street level.
Day-to-day. Walking the streets. Making decisions. Telling right from wrong.
Right.
They're not, you know, going up that list and, you know, using any sort of abstract, you know, underpinnings of a system or even a system at all. They're just, you know, they're using the mores that they've been, you know, around them in the world and that they've been, you know, taught culturally. So I think that's an interesting disconnect that, you know, these systems that people have, you know, that disrupting them can be so, you know, problematic for people.
Yeah.
But they're not really using those systems. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I agree with you 100%.
So I just like to think about why that is.
Okay, there's a couple of things I think that go on. Firstly, people identify with ideas. They people's identities are, well, identity is a weird thing, but people take their the things that they like. So if I like jazz music, that gets wrapped up into part of my identity. If I liked the movie Navy SEALs, that becomes part of my identity. If I believe in Jeebus, that becomes a part of my identity. Identity is hard to form on its own. It's like it's a nebulous thing without qualifiers. And I think people pick up qualifiers of like music or religion or sports teams or whatever, and they pick those up and put them inside themselves because they're out there. They're just floating out there, and they're easy to take in, but then it's an immediate community. If I say I'm a Steelers fan, immediately there are lots and lots of people out there who will be more socially accepting of me, more apt to talk to me, more excited to be around me just because of that. If I any subculture that identifies overly with a kind of music or a kind of movie or a kind of game or a religion or a political quote unquote party, you know, I mean, like these ideas of conservative or liberal becomes a part of the identity because it's easy out there. There's already an existing community. If I'm thinking more deeply about the universe, right? And I think, and I'm an existentialist, right? I've come to the conclusion I'm an existentialist. So I believe that existence precedes essence. You don't have any, there's no meaning until you give something meaning, blah, 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 blah.
It's really fun to smoke cigarettes.
Where's the club for that, Dave?
In cafes.
Because that shit went, yeah, exactly. In the 1940s, maybe. But
no, in the 1940s, you smoked cigarettes in prison camps. It was more of the 50s and 60s.
Well, regardless.
Where you got out and you got to go to cafes.
So, regardless, there's no... last I checked, there's no TV show for me. There's no real website. Nobody cares about that, you know. So,
I just want to say, first, in the same vein that, you know, somebody's doing anything, there's definitely a website.
Yeah, that's probably.
Let's be honest.
But subconsciously, it's easier for me to take up things in a generic way, knowing that if I'm general about my belief system or attachment, that there's less conflict. Example: the greatest example to me is the Christian faith. There are no two Christians who agree on all aspects of the faith if you ask them enough questions. And you don't even have to ask them that many. 5 to 10, I could get, you know, a nice group of Christians split along lines pretty quickly. You know, what's heaven like? How do you get there? You know, boom, right there. We've got a million different definitions. But people don't talk about that. People say, I'm a Christian. And they say vague things like, well, you know, God has a plan, or God bless you, or, you know, Christ loves us. God loves us. That's a great one. That's just easy, you know. Who's going to disagree? Who's coming down on that except me, the hateful atheist, you know, the spiteful atheist saying, what in the hell are you talking about? If you talk to, I mean, if you just walk out in the world, you know, most of the people around you are Christian or religious, and you're like, well, God loves everybody, no resistance is going to come your way. Very few people choose the route of God hates fags. There's not, that is not a big group for a reason, Dave, because it is hard to get, it's hard to build a community around that. And what's happening there psychologically is a different thing. So anyways, so to get back to our point, the person has grabbed up all these things and they're part of their identity now, right? But they have not thought thoroughly about them. Because thinking about them, A, it more likely to cause a crisis because you're going to find an inconsistency, or like, for instance, you're going to be like, well, why do I love the Steelers? No real reason at all. They're not moral paragons. They're not, you know, I was born here. That's why. And my parents like them.
Also, it's a wait, part of my, quick, you know, football tangent
growing up
while we're here.
Experience. Yeah.
Just got to ask. I think it's tonight. I don't know because it matters that little. But I know it's this week.
Yeah, so the All-Star game.
What's your Pro Bowl pick?
Pro Bowl game.
You an AFC man or an NFC man? Who's making it? Who's the Pro Bowl champions?
I don't want to even think about it. It's
pick
so
a side. Pick a score.
Nah.
Pick a side. Just, pick a score.
I don't know. I'm not going to do that. Because then I would have to look at, I don't even want to know. I don't want to think about
say,
it. I don't want to think about it.
NFC 54, AFC 41.
Oh, nice job.
That's my pick.
Good.
It's my Pro Bowl pick.
Good. Good call, Dave. All right. So anyways, so the person then has all this stuff in their identity that is basically, you know, just kind of ideas or vagueness, right? They don't think about them very hard because, again, thinking about them would cause a disconnect from them or cause a crisis possibly, and why would you want that? The whole point of getting it is just to have some things to identify with to solidify who you are versus who everyone else is, and to, you know, to make you happy, because being a part of a community, having an identity, it makes us happy. So we things like the free will thing is a little weird. I don't know why that happens quite, but when you tell, I think people just have heard this idea that of free will before, and they like it, so they just kind of accept it or just take it on because it sounds good.
I think also there's sort of a substratum, you know, there's a part of people's identities, not necessarily identities, but at least a part of people's bedrock assumptions where it's like, well, I think it's kind of the idea of identity where, you know, if someone's identity is essentially constructed out of these, you know, preferences and choices, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I said it right there, choices, you know, mm-hmm. if that requires free will, so, you know.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, that's an interesting tie-back.
If you
back,
believe
yeah.
identity is constructed that way, yeah, without free will, suddenly, you know, your identity is, you know, what is it? You know, in terms of identity as expressed in a yeah. collection of preferences socially. I just want to make that distinct from, you know, identity as, you know, the big philosophical, you know,
yeah.
identity. That's a whole other
thing. That's a whole other thing, but that, I mean, it definitely ties into what we're talking about right here. But here's what happens then. Some crises occur constantly when because your identity is in flux, but also because then it is challenged often. And so if someone says, you know, well, the Steelers suck, suddenly you've like come at with a sword part of my identity. Now I have to get upset. If you tell me that, if I hate episode one, The Phantom Menace, and you're like, nah, it's a pretty good movie. If I'm invested enough in my hatred as a part of my identity, I will come at you, Dave. I will come at you with fists. And people fight over the dumbest shit. And fighting itself, arguing to a large degree, a large part of it, is the definition of identity. It is saying, it is defining, trying to define the world. If you fight with your significant other, oftentimes you're trying to assert that things should work one way or do work one way, and the way that things are happening is not the way that is acceptable. So that, you know, causes a lot of fights. But honestly, if you want to know my opinion on significant other fights, Dave, 99% of the fights you have with anybody in the world are fights that they're having with somebody who pissed them off earlier but they didn't fight with.
Yeah, that is often the case.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not saying that you didn't do anything wrong to get into a fight with X person or Y person, but generally a lot of the anger and frustration they might be bringing to that argument is from a completely different argument or a completely different situation. So anyways.
I'm trying to think relationship tips.
Relationship tips. You don't want those from me. Well, I guess I have had a successful marriage and relationship for...
So far, so good?
So far, so good. For, like, a long time now. 7 years or 8 years. Something
who's counting?
In that number.
Who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting? Dave. Come on. But anyways, yeah, so, you know, you get into these crises where your identity is put into question by somebody else's claims, or just the general claims of a movement or the ideas of a religion or anything else. You get these, you can often get some vague ideas about what you're talking about, but how many people in this country are talking about Sharia law? They have no idea what that is.
Most of them.
How many people in this country are afraid of Muslims, have never read the Quran? A lot. I mean, it's just, it's a ridiculous, when you take just one step back from it, I mean, like, that's the real problem and real question to me is, how do people continue to believe this stuff, to have these crises without, I mean, you have to know that you can just take a step back from the world and see things a little differently, right? I mean, surely that has been ingrained enough in our culture through movies and television that people can understand that that's a thing, right?
I'm not sure it has, because if it had been, then you'd have to feel like people would do it more, which they don't.
Which they don't, yeah, and then, you know. Yeah, that's the only confusing thing about it to me, is that no one seems to know that the stuff they believe and the stuff that they assert and the stuff that gets them really upset when somebody challenges them is bullshit. It's nothing. It's nothing to fight or argue about. When you get right down to it, it's right. We're all still biological machines who need food, water, and shelter. And fighting over, you know, which of your imaginary gods is... fighting over religion, fighting over politics, physically fighting, punching someone in a fist fight over a sports team. I mean, how does that still happen?
And I think one thing that I've... Actually, a couple things, I guess, that I find sort of interesting pivoting off of that stuff, off of what you've been saying,
mm-hmm.
is I find it interesting that kind of based off of what you said, this makes sense to me. Well, it doesn't necessarily make sense to me that this is how it happens, but it makes sense as an explanation for how things are in the world.
Yes.
That, for example, if you introduce, a contradiction into someone's, religious moral system, non-religious moral system into... Because I still think that there's that disconnect I was talking about where, there's the systems people believe in and then whether they apply those to anything in life or whether life just, happens by, mores and cultural rules and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But what to me is interesting about that is the thought, I guess, that, they don't necessarily obviously use, their, say, moral, ethical system to come to, realizations about their, their actual moral behavior.
Yeah.
But the fact that they have a moral, ethical system, theoretically, mm-hmm. Even if you haven't thought it through, the idea that it's just there in the background, if I need it, it's like, I guess you have it, like, it's the in case of, emergency break glass thing. So, and then just these crises, I guess it's like, okay, you may not be using that fire extinguisher, but I just want to tell you it's empty. I feel like that might be what it's like.
That's it.
But then...
Okay.
But then stepping back from that, one thing, I think we actually talked about this a little bit last night, that to me seems even a step weirder from that, and it's almost more like that identification, kind of like a sports team identification or, something that has even less bearing on anything, but it's even a step back from the sports team thing,
mm-hmm.
would be sometimes the things people build into their identity, like, have even less, an even more just insanely tenuous connection. Like, I think last night, you know, we briefly wound up talking about the, you know, couple years ago, you know, Pluto no longer being a planet
thing. Yeah, right.
And that bothered a lot of people.
Yep. Yeah.
With no interest in, you know, astronomy.
No.
And, you know, it's not even something they casually cared about. It's, you know, it's not like a sports team you would even follow with a passion. It's just a fact you were taught.
Yep. When you were a kid.
But it's a meaning, like, it's not a fact that has any influence on anything in your life or your behavior or that you ever think about.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fact you were taught as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Then new information happened and now the fact is different.
Yep.
And that blew people's shit. That freaked people out.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
It's so bizarre.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is held responsible, if you will, for making
the man who killed Pluto.
The man who killed Pluto, yeah. Who made Pluto not a planet, so to speak. All he did was he made an exhibit at the planetarium in New York where Pluto was not one of the eight planets because Pluto is in the Kuiper Belt and has a bunch of other planetoids or mini planets around it that are the same size as it. And, you know, if you count Pluto as a planet, you have to include, I don't know what the count is at now, but a lot more bodies in the Kuiper Belt as planets too. So he wrote a book and did a documentary, a Nova episode called The Pluto Files, where he actually tries to talk about, like, why did people react this way to Pluto being not a planet, so to speak. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he has an answer for that, but he has, I don't know. I think it's just, honestly, I think it is as simple as, that is the way it always was. I don't like change.
Yeah, which is, it's just fascinating to see that on such a meaningless level.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it changes nothing about your world as you experience it. It changes nothing about the world, you know, astronomically. It doesn't even change, you know, it doesn't even change, you know, it's not like saying, you're wrong. It's to someone who, you know, was taught that.
Yeah.
It's just saying, this is what we thought then, and this is how we think now, you know, something changed. But again, yeah, it's just that change,
yep.
I guess, which is fascinating how riled up people got about that.
Yeah, yeah, it's,
because to me, that is just, you know, because we started this conversation, you know, it's, okay, disrupting people's moral systems or,
yeah.
you know, their, you know.
But you don't even have to go that far.
We dialed it down to, you know, your sports team affiliations, just, you know, other sort of not necessarily meaningless, but less, you know, bearing on how you live your life, constructions of identity. Then we pulled it back further to just a fact. And does that somehow get wrapped up in identity, or is the change thing different?
I think there's
What do you think about the change thing?
There's a lot of change. I mean, the thing is a lot of people were taught that when they were very young, right? The nine planets. So there's a little bit of investment there, I think. But if, I mean, I think there's a little bit of, I got a yawn, hold on.
That's terrible.
That's bad radio. Anyways, I think there's a little bit of the anti-science sentiment there, too. I don't know. I feel that a lot in our American United States culture of people who kind of just hate science because I don't know if they feel like scientists are cocky or what, but it's just, yeah, it's not good. But what it means is that you have these people who just don't like anything that a scientist says, and some of them are the insane clown posse.
True.
I mean, there's a people making political hay by going anti-science, whether it's, you know, saying, well, I don't know if I believe in evolution, or the goddamn climate change argument, or, I mean, those are the two big ones to me. I think that A lot of it comes
well,
from...
Well, there's that, and then there's also the kind of most, I would say, the most minorly maddening anti-science thing to me is, besides, you know, yeah, those are obviously the two biggies, is, you know, the evolution debate and, you know, the climate change debate. But just my personal anti-science pet peeve is that anytime someone... And you know, well, there's no reason for me to try to be even-handed. I'll just say anytime a Republican, because it's generally Republicans, is coming up with an example of like a crazy government program because we're so wasteful. It's crazy.
Yeah,
they always like pick on some poor guy's like federally funded research program and take it wildly out of context to make it sound absurd.
Yeah.
Oh, that drives me fucking insane.
And it, as
I
well
hate
it should.
That.
As well it should. I mean, they, yeah, like, what was the one that Bobby Jindal thought he should bring up?
Actually, that one
volcano.
Was ironic, because it was the volcano monitoring thing, and then didn't was it Mount St. Helens that blew, or after
that? Yeah, like,
that?
Fairly soon after that.
Fairly shortly after
that. It wasn't, like, a full, but it was a little bit of an eruption.
Yeah, enough to make that funny.
Enough to make it very funny. Yeah, it's, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I,
you know, do you think, here's a thought, actually.
Okay.
Do you think that these people are just implacable in their anti-science nonsense? Or do you think if we just threw them a bone and gave them Pluto back, we could make some headway on some of this other stuff? Just bring it to the bargaining table. Because
hey,
it's
we'll
wrong.
We'll give you Pluto, but...
It's wrong. Pluto's
not
a planet.
It's not that important in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if we can get, you know, if we can fix Texas textbooks, I'm willing to give them Pluto. I think you know, we as, you know, kind of pro-science people, on one hand, I understand, you know, you're just like, no, science is about an unwavering commitment to the truth.
It
blah,
is,
blah,
but,
blah.
Hey,
but we got to bring something to the bargaining table.
If Kevin Picard says it, then it's true. Well, he didn't say science, but he said, it, you know, the Starfleet is dedicated to the truth, be it scientific truth. Historical truth, or I think he said moral truth. I don't know.
Probably. Although, man, I gotta say,
yeah,
talking about those three things and kind of giving them a simple equivalence, that's another, that's a whole other thing. I'm just thinking, if you take those three concepts,
yeah,
say, are they and can they be the same kind of truth? I think we may have found at least a subtopic for next week.
Yeah, scientific truth, moral truth, and historical truth. They're three different truths, but they are kinds of truths.
Yeah.
I think it's important that we distinguish between those three truths.
Yep. What is... Oh, man. We found out... We're, Chuck?
Yeah.
We're going to epistemology town.
Oh.
We've
that's
done
not
it.
Where I wanted to go.
That's it's happened.
How
it's
dare you,
late.
Dave? You're dragging me down with you. But yeah, so I think that the reason that it comes down to that kind of stuff is pretty simply that it's tied to identity, and identity is a fragile thing. The ego is basically your worst enemy. Like, I think last week I was talking about the gut and how you don't listen to your gut because your gut is stupid. Your ego is even dumber. Your ego is the thing that tells you stuff like, wow, this car functions perfectly, but is old. I should buy a new car that is ridiculously overpriced rather than find something that where utility is the, you know, the mainstay. Ego is the thing that tells you, like, that person said a bad word about me.
I should destroy them.
I'm going to destroy them. Yeah. It's just, you know, whenever you wrap up your notion of self into something, whether it be an object or an idea or even just I don't want to be called a asshole or something, which never worked in my life, that's for sure. You can't, you're heading for trouble because somebody's going to call you an asshole. So, then you're screwed, because then you have to, I don't know, fight him, I guess.
All right, so, going against the gut, You're going against the ego.
Yeah.
So basically, you got...
I'm anti-God, I'm anti-ego.
Two-thirds of Freud's brain down. You've punched out the id. You're going for the ego.
Yeah.
Tune in next week. Chuck versus the superego.
I don't really have... I don't think I have a real problem with the superego. I don't really
Well, you got a week to find one.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't really buy into the Freudian division of the psyche.
Well, that's because it's nonsense. But
it is fairly nonsensical. But everybody understands what I mean by the ego, so we can talk
about
that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good shorthand.
And the gut and the id are different. Like, but, you know, I mean, your gut can be very well directed by subconscious heuristics. It can also be really wrong. So it's good to, like, know what things your gut is good at.
Freud, you know, I mean...
Oh, Freud.
He said a lot of things no one had ever said before. A couple of them were right.
It's important to know which ones are right. There's, like, three.
Then, but man, a lot of that stuff, I mean, I think it's a, you know, pulling back to, you know, Pretentious Man Town and pulling out...
Pretentious Man Town, let's go there.
And pulling out a Nietzsche quote is, you know, I think, what does he say, all philosophy is biography, which, you know, that's a very sort of Nietzsche pithy kind of quote.
Yeah, but it's also correct.
And, but man, Freud, that's all I'm going to say after that, is all philosophy is biography. Freud.
All philosophy is biography, all cigars are penises. Unless Freud tells you it is not. But yeah, you know, it's nonsense stuff. It's nonsense. But it's common language. You got to start. You got to talk in common language, at least. You can't, you know, invent words and expect people to follow along. So I'm just using common language.
All right.
Common language, Dave. Common vision.
One vision?
One vision. One race, one hope, one true religion.
Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Fried chicken.
Oh.
That's how that ends, right? Like,
yeah, I think so. Which is...
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
They wanted to lighten it up. They're like, you know, this song's a little serious. We're being a little preachy. Let's throw a fried chicken reference in there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's, like, really sticking the landing or if that's, like, you flip off the bars and you break your ankle. It's one of those two things as an end.
I think fried chicken sticks the landing because you're like... Because they don't give you anything after that. It is over. The song is over, and you can't argue with them. There's no... You can't be like, wait, that didn't make any sense. You can't... There's just no arguing with One Vision at that point. Because it is too late in the, you know, course of human events, as it were.
All right. And I think with that, we may be done. Because, let's be honest.
What's our time look like, Dave? What's the time look like?
Oh, we're at like... About 43 minutes.
Oh, my God. We went over again. We're terrible at this. All right, well.
I don't know, but maybe aiming for 30 is the only way we can keep it to 45. That may just be the kind of people we are.
It's got to be who we are. So Dave wants to talk about epistemology next week.
Yeah, through the lens of Star Trek. Because that's how it's happening, it seems.
Why not?
But it seems like what we've discovered.
I'm not convinced yet, but I'll probably
It doesn't
just
have
go
to be 40 minutes, but... We can do a little.
I will probably go along for the ride, Dave. I'm just saying.
All right, I'll prepare.
That'll be
to
episode
do some
59.
Lifting.
Then we'll have episode 60. That's a big number, Dave. It's more than 59.
Every number is a big number at this point. We've made it.
We have made it. We crossed the 50 threshold. At this point, we're unstoppable. Now that we're not getting anything for that, but we are unstoppable. All right. Well, from everyone here at I'm Trying to Think. Highway Side Studios.
The Highway Adjunct.
Next time we will record back in the recording cave, which is far better than the
Our
highway.
Recording lair.
Yeah, the lair is good. All right, well, we'll be back maybe next week. Maybe 2 weeks. I'm not making any promises. With more, I'm trying to think, with episode 59, which will undoubtedly be called The Wesley Principle.
That's a promise I'm not sure I'm willing to make. We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Now I'm hungry.